The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Time now for your lunchtime doctor. Hi to all of our first-time listeners, and who knows, you may be a first-time caller, first-time texter. This is where we get into all your medical questions live. So before we say hi to Dr. Brittany Dean, let me let you know the numbers so you could jot them down and have them as well. Feel free to call us up with your medical questions at 625-2257 or WhatsApp us at 3061065. You could also feel free to message our other frequencies at Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5, and they will have your questions right here to us in studio. So we say good afternoon, going out to Dr. Brittany Dean. Good afternoon, Doc.
Good afternoon, Base. I hope everybody had a great, fantastic weekend. I know I did. We actually had our health fair this weekend at Skinners Park, and I met so many of the listeners. Everybody came out to see about their health, check their blood pressure, check their blood sugar. I was so impressed with so many of the people that came out.
Right, nice, beautiful. What were some of the common things that people wanted to get checked out there at the fair?
So, I mean, commonly, definitely the blood pressure, the blood sugar. We had the prostate screening for the men. We even had ear screening and dental screening. We had the influenza vaccines. We had the eye screening, ECGs, you know, everything that you could think of in terms of your health. We had it at the fair, and a lot of the listeners, they actually came to the fair. We had a chat. It was so nice meeting all of you in person, and you know, call in, ask your questions, and we'll see how the conversation goes. You know, one person might call in and say something, but then another person might have a different idea or a different way that they manage it. So it's all about having a conversation around health.
Nice one, beautiful. So we hope to have a lot more of these health fairs as time goes along. You know, this one was in the south, and we hope a lot of people participate. Maybe there might be even one going to Tobago as well, because we can't leave out Tobago.
Definitely, we're actually heading to Tobago, I think, at the end of this month.
Okay, great.
We will be there, but we were invited to a health fair that's taking place in Tobago. So I'm excited to go over to Tobago and talk to some of the persons there, because you know, everybody deserves their proper health care and should know how to manage their own health and their bodies as well.
All right, I know Wednesday is the international, is it Diabetes Day? Because this is
Diabetes Day. So of course November is somewhat diabetes month, so we had a lot surrounding diabetes in terms of the fair as well. But November is also the month where we sort of get men to get into their health as well. So just on Friday, we're actually there's at the office of the Prime Minister, we will be also doing certain screenings for men. So the blood pressure, the same things, because sometimes men don't like to come out for everything. But we did see a good bit of men on Saturday, and hopefully we'll see a good bit on Friday as well.
That's beautiful. So it's nice to know that men are out there taking care of their health. All right, so while we wait on some calls, once again at 625-2257, WhatsApp us at 3061065. Let's talk a little bit about our topic, about peripheral arterial disease and how does it affect the body. First of all, what is peripheral arterial disease? Is it known as PAD for short, PAD?
Yes, it's actually known as PAD for short. Now, you know, it really sounds like a very big term, but it is something that we commonly see. So it's a circulatory problem. And when I talk about the word circulatory, I mean our arteries and veins, you know, the vessels that carry blood within our body. So what tends to happen in peripheral arterial disease, or PAD, this problem is caused by the arteries narrowing, reducing that blood flow to either the legs or to the arms, but we most often see it in the legs. So essentially, it is caused by a buildup of, you know, all these fatty deposits known as plaques on the walls of the arteries. And of course, we know this is atherosclerosis because we talk about this narrowing of the arteries in the heart as well, how people get heart attacks, etc. So you will have a reduction in blood flow if, you know, the pipe that carries the blood becomes clogged up. It's not going to carry blood efficiently anymore. And what tends to happen when your limbs no longer is getting the blood that you need? Remember, blood is carrying all the oxygen and nutrients and everything our body and our tissue needs to survive. So if you have a reduction in that blood flow, what is going to happen is that the person is going to start experiencing certain symptoms. So they're going to get pain in the leg or muscle cramps during physical activity like walking. And it can significantly limit somebody's mobility. And of course, it will limit them doing lower exercises as well as decrease their overall quality of life. And, you know, beyond just limiting that blood flow to the legs, sometimes that PAD can be a warning sign of widespread accumulation of these plaques in our arteries, meaning that it can not only be seen in the legs, but it could be the first sign or symptom that these plaques are all over the body. And this is going to put that individual at risk for other events, so the cardiovascular events like the heart attack and the stroke. And if that is left untreated, the peripheral arterial disease, that can lead to what we call ischemic limb, meaning that the limb is going to die if it is not getting oxygen and if it's not getting its nutrients. And you will notice that there's a reduction in the blood flow. It will cause a lot of wounds, ulcers, gangrene, and sometimes it is very necessary for us to amputate that leg once it gets to that level of complication.
All right, we do have some WhatsApp messages coming in. We'll take a break in just a short while and get right to them. But in the meantime, what are some of the main causes of PAD, and are there specific risk factors that people should be aware of?
So the primary cause is essentially what I talked about, atherosclerosis. And that is the process where the cholesterol and the fatty deposits, all of these things build up on the walls of our arteries, leading the arteries to become narrow or stiffened. So think of it like a pipe. If the pipe becomes clogged up, you can't get any sort of water flow through that pipe because there's a buildup of debris or garbage or something in the pipe. And that's going to lead to the narrowing of the pipe. And of course, in terms of the arteries, it's also going to stiffen the arteries because of inflammation. And all of these things accumulated is going to reduce the blood flow. And atherosclerosis can affect many of the arteries. But in peripheral arterial disease, it is going to affect the arteries of the periphery or the outskirts, meaning the arteries of our limbs. We would usually see it targeting the arteries in the legs itself. And there are some risk factors as well for developing PAD. And on top of the list is smoking. And another one that we definitely will see is high cholesterol levels, high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity, and sometimes genetics can play a role. If you have a family history of atherosclerosis or heart disease, your risk for peripheral arterial disease may be elevated. And they're all that are a bit more vulnerable to this particular disease. For instance, smokers and individuals with diabetes are definitely at the highest risk because both of those conditions significantly damage your blood vessels. So if you're a smoker or a diabetic or both, your risk for peripheral arterial disease is going to increase exponentially. Age is another factor that we look at. We will see peripheral arterial disease being more common in individuals over 50 years of age, even though younger people can be affected if they have other risk factors. And of course, you know, things like the sedentary lifestyles, the diets that are high in the bad fats and the sugars, all of these things will contribute to plaque buildup, and that will increase somebody's risk of peripheral arterial disease.
All right, yeah, we got some WhatsApp messages coming in just a show. But I was watching television just a while ago. Well, the Doctor's Journal, which is a show, of course, you and Dr. Michael Beyond. There was a cardiovascular surgeon talking about processed foods, some of the things that we need to cut out. And of course, in diet, and I'm sure the diet will come up about this very same PAD. But what form does diet play in terms of the PAD and that say very same processed foods that we should be cutting out?
So you see the thing with peripheral arterial disease, a lot of the diseases that we see, they're sort of intertwined. So we're seeing that for peripheral arterial disease, the risk factors are other diseases. So diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and of course, being a smoker, all of these different things can be added in as well. So if we look at treating the underlying cause, for example, if somebody's cause of their peripheral arterial disease is diabetes, we have to treat the underlying cause, which is the diabetes. And of course, it is going to be dependent on whether the person has diabetes or high blood pressure. But across the board, you know, we need to cut out the processed foods, the refined sugars, the refined carbohydrates. All of these things are simple sugars. They're going to break down very easily, and they are linked to inflammation. Inflammation is also what causes that plaque buildup in the arteries. So really and truly, it is sort of a cyclical event that can occur. If your diabetes gets worse, your peripheral arterial disease will get worse. And of course, with peripheral arterial disease, later on, we will talk about the symptoms that persons will experience with that and the complications of that as well. But it's important for everybody to know that a lot of these diseases are intertwined. Even things like a heart attack, your risk factor is another disease like diabetes or high blood pressure. So it's not just about treating the heart attack, or it's not just about treating the peripheral arterial disease. We also have to treat the underlying lifestyle diseases as well.
And of course, who are some, besides people with diabetes, who are some of the most common, most at risk of developing this condition?
So peripheral arterial disease is a lot more common than people would realize. I mean, people who are listening in, they will hear it for the first time, and this would probably be the first time ever they've heard it. But you know, persons with diabetes and high blood pressure, they are experiencing this and they don't even know. It actually affects millions of people worldwide, and the prevalence will increase with age. So approximately 1 in 5 individuals over the age of 60 actually has peripheral arterial disease. And despite it being so frequent, like I said, it will often go undiagnosed because people don't know that they even have it sometimes. So their symptoms can actually mimic other conditions or be mistakenly attributed to aging or inactivity. But many people may not experience symptoms initially, or they may just dismiss them as, you know, having fatigue or tiredness in the leg. And those at the highest risk of developing PAD would be the persons with a history of smoking and the persons with a history of diabetes. And yes, we're saying age is a risk factor, but if you are smoking at a very young age, you are very well putting yourself at risk for peripheral arterial disease as well. Smokers are actually several times more likely to develop PAD than non-smokers. And smoking will actually accelerate the plaque formation and cause arterial damage, further complicating the peripheral arterial disease. Individuals with diabetes will often have other associated conditions such as high blood pressure and high cholesterol. And of course, that is going to increase their risk of peripheral arterial disease even more. And of course, you have the other vulnerable groups. So people who are obese, the people with the high cholesterol, and the people who will live a sedentary lifestyle. If you're not getting exercise in your leg, you're not allowing your circulatory system to function adequately and carry nutrients and oxygen to all the different parts of your limb.
All right, let's just take a break and answer some questions that are coming in. Remember, folks, you could feel free to call us up at 625-2257 with any of your medical questions. Also, WhatsApp us at 306-1065. So let's go. This is a word here, but I may hope I could break this down in some syllables and pronounce it right. A good day, doc. Can you use guselkumab? Oh, guselkumab is a medication while breastfeeding. Or juselkumab?
Can you spell?
Oh, let me spell it.
Could you spell?
G U S E L K U M A B.
G-U-S-E-L-K-U-M-A-B. I'm not too familiar. I'm not too sure if the person spelled it.
Yeah, because it doesn't look like...
Okay. So what it is actually something for psoriasis. So we know it by a different name sometimes down here, but it is a an antibody that we would use in conditions like moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. So there's no evidence, like it's not very well researched in terms of using it while breastfeeding, but we have to be able to weigh the potential benefits for the mother against the possible risks to the infant. So in order to do that, you have to be able to consult with your particular physician who has recommended that for you. So I can't tell you, you can't use it, because I don't know how severe your condition is. And if it is very severe, they may allow you to use it in smaller doses as opposed to the actual dose that you would have been using. So I definitely suggest you go to the physician who recommended that medication to you.
But most likely even with breastfeeding, I mean, should you stay away from most medications?
Yeah, there are medications that are safe for breastfeeding, but there are also some that we definitely tell mummies not to take. But the reason being is, remember, baby is getting breast milk from mummy, and the breast milk serves as the baby's immune system, or that is how the baby is going to mount an immune response. The baby's immune system is not yet fully developed, so they are getting their antibodies from mummy's breast milk, and we don't want that to transfer over, you know, any sort of medications that will pose a threat to baby. We don't want it to transfer over to baby.
All right, nice. Remember, folks, so questions at 625-2257. Feel free to WhatsApp us at 306-1065. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with Dr. Brittany Dean. We're here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Good afternoon, Doctor. Interesting program. What causes cramps in your instep and your hands and also on your back after going to the land and sweating in the clothing? Got soaked and wet with sweat. Thank you.
Well, I mean, the cramps could be a multitude of different things. And of course, the first thing we always think of when we hear cramps is some sort of muscle fatigue. So if you were doing some sort of strenuous work, that could cause cramps. The other thing that we have to think about is that, remember, the body is made up of several different layers. We have muscles, we have bone, we have nerves, we have skin, and we can basically go through each of the these anatomical layers and give you reasons as to why you may be feeling or you may be experiencing certain things. But given the context that you were probably doing some sort of strenuous work, it could be some form of muscle fatigue. Another option that we have to look at is, do you have any other comorbidities? For example, diabetes or high blood pressure, because those diseases, as we know, will come with nerve issues. It can come with arterial issues as well, and that could be a reason for the cramping. So it could be a multitude of different things. But I am inclined to say that you could have possibly been doing something strenuous with your hands, with your feet, and probably bending down too much, and you've gotten cramps all over.
Good afternoon, Doc. What happens when you sometimes see stars or get that flashy feeling with your eyes open? Not dizzy, but just you see like flashing and stars.
I know what persons are talking about. You know, sometimes when you open your eyes, you tend to start to adjust to the light. And what happens is that, you know, there are many layers and many functions of the eyes. So we have the muscles, we have the nerves, we have the lens, the cornea, all of these different things. And sometimes people may be seeing certain things, and this is how we know they have to get their eye checked, etc. But a lot of people do experience the flashes or the little, you know, the floaters or just little things that you see at the corners of your eye. And it is very normal. You know, it's just sometimes our eye adjusting to different lights, or yeah, that's basically it.
Good day, Doc. What causes constipation, and what are some of the best foods to get rid of it?
So in terms of constipation, there are a multitude of different causes. Are you drinking enough water? If you're not drinking enough water, you are not going to pass stool as often. Do you have enough fiber in your diet? And there are other different things that we also have to look at, because constipation can also be a symptom of other different diseases as well. But we usually say that it is a digestive issue. The person is not getting enough bowel movements, or they have that difficulty passing stool. And there's a variety of different factors we have to look at. So your lifestyle, your diet, any medications and underlying medical conditions. And like I said, the low fiber intake, dehydration, a sedentary lifestyle, because if you are not active in your everyday life, that actually slows down your digestion. There are certain medications as well that can cause constipation. And if you have changes in your routine sometimes, if you're traveling or changes in your diet, that can disrupt your daily habits and your bowel movements. So in order to manage this in terms of your diet, you want to increase your fiber intake. So you want to aim for a diet that is rich in fiber from whole grains and fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and all of these different things. So what happens in terms of fiber is that it adds bulk to the stools, and by doing so, it will promote regular bowel movements. So in terms of your fruits, you want to look at things like your apples, your pears, prunes, citrus fruits. In terms of your broccoli, your vegetables, your broccoli, the carrots, green leafy vegetables and Brussels sprouts, and brown rice and oatmeal, and beans and lentils, all of these different things. You could drink plenty of fluids. You want to add some probiotics to your diet as well. Sometimes you can get that in the yogurt. All of these things will help to balance your gut bacteria and promote healthy digestion. And there's so many to do in terms of food as well. Of course, reducing your sugar intake, reducing the refined carbohydrates, and incorporating the more healthy fats like the olive oils and the avocados. All of these things will help to lubricate the digestive system and promote bowel movements.
All right, Doc, 65-year-old male. When you reach this age, Doc, how often should you get a checkup?
I would say that if you are healthy in terms of you do not have any underlying medical conditions at all, you are active, you want to aim for a yearly checkup. if you do have other comorbidities, that is going to be dependent on how severe your comorbidities are. Are you getting your glucose under control? Are you getting your blood pressure under control? So your personal doctor might want to see you every 2 months, every 3 months. But for a fairly healthy person who is active, who eats well, and your checkups are usually very good, I would say once a year is fine.
All right, so we take a short break and we'll come right back with the Lunchtime Doctor, folks, and continue our topic of discussion. You're listening to us on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sankey 106.1, and Sky 99.5.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
To put forward a proposition.
To represent the opposition.
To put the art of arguing on display.
Debates that are well thought out.
Meticulously researched.
Beautifully articulated.
If you think your mind is made up,
we just might surprise you.
The show where bright, inquiring minds tackle tough topics.
Make your point. Tuesdays at 8 p.m. on CNC3. Live streaming at cnc3.co.tt and on the CNC3 Facebook page, with reruns on Thursdays and Sundays at 4 p.m.
Power up your Saturdays with Carrie V's electrifying energy on Speak Your Mind Saturdays. Here, you're not just tuning in, you're transforming the show into a vibrant tapestry of opinions, laughter, and spirited debates. Get set for a day packed with the fun, the burning issues, and Carrie V's infectious personality. Join the fun, fuel the conversation, speak your mind. Saturdays with Carrie V on Freedom 106.5 FM.
For generations we've been serving you, giving you the best for less, that's what we do. Friendly faces, fresh foods on every aisle, at JTA Supermarkets you are sure to smile.
The best prices each day.
Come to JTA.
JTA Supermarkets. Your total bill always costs less at JTA.
It's Movember on Freedom 106.5 FM, acknowledging and providing solutions about mental health for men. Here are some facts and tips. Men's response to stress. The American Psychological Association has found that men are more likely than women to report physical symptoms associated with stress, such as headache, increased heart rate, or muscle tension. Keep listening and streaming Freedom 106.5 FM for Movember, acknowledging and providing solutions to men's health in TNT.
All right, folks, so we're back. The Lunchtime Doctor, Freedom 106.5 FM, Sankey 106.1 and Sky 99.5, 625-2257. Feel free to call us up with any of your medical questions or WhatsApp us at 306-1065. We continue with our topic, of course, PAD. Many people may confuse PAD with general muscle soreness or aging-related leg pain. How can someone tell the difference?
So, in terms of muscle soreness, we usually experience that with exercise, or aging can feel similar to the discomfort that people will experience in peripheral arterial disease. But, you know, there's certain key differences that people need to be aware of. So when we're talking about peripheral arterial disease related leg pain, this is known as what we call claudication, and that typically occurs during physical activity, like the person is walking or climbing stairs and is relieved shortly after resting. So while walking, the person may only be able to take a certain amount of steps because they will feel some sort of pain in the legs, and when they sit down to rest, that pain will be relieved. Muscle soreness or general fatigue from aging, that does not really follow a specific pattern, and you will find some sort of improvement with stretching or massages or prolonged rest with that general muscle weakness. You know, other than that, in terms of peripheral arterial disease, the symptoms may include other signs of poor circulation. For example, the legs or the feet may actually feel cold. The wounds on the legs and the feet may. Yes.
Yeah. No. Just we just had a call. I was just telling them to hold on. But let's take the call. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm Doc.
Good afternoon.
How is it that you could raise the iron levels faster? Because I've been using the iron tablet, and the only thing I'm seeing is the darkness in my skin.
Could you repeat that, please?
Iron level. I know my iron level. Iron level low because in my eyes they're very white, and I've been using the red fine red tablet. But to me, the only thing I'm seeing is that the pool is dark. But it's like, and I've been on these iron tablets for like over a year.
Okay,
so
no problem.
Raise my iron level.
Right. Okay. So there are several ways that you can. One of them is taking the iron tablets. But for some people, they may just feel more constipated and feel like it's not doing anything for them. You can also take the liquid form of ferroglobin. And you want to increase iron-rich foods in your diet as well. So there are heme sources that that is actually the most easily absorbed form of iron, and it's actually found in animal products. So sometimes eating some red meat or some poultry like chicken or turkey, and even fish and seafood like the salmon or the tuna, all of these things can help you to get a proper heme source. And then, you know, there are non-heme iron sources that you can look at in terms of if you're looking for plant-based foods. So your legumes, like your lentils or your chickpeas or your beans. And of course, you can't forget the dark leafy greens like the spinach and the kale and even nuts and seeds and whole grains as well. Sometimes combining your iron with vitamin C can significantly enhance the absorption of these non-heme iron from the plant-based sources. So you want to pair these legumes and the dark leafy greens with foods that are also high in vitamin C, so you can actually get a proper absorption of the iron. So, you know, having the green leafy vegetables and having a side of citrus fruits like your oranges or your grapefruits, or your bell peppers and tomatoes and broccoli and all of these things. For example, you know, if you're eating a spinach salad, you want to put a little lemon juice dressing or include some bell peppers with beans. All of these things can actually boost your iron absorption. So, you know, these are just some ways that you can naturally increase your iron, your heme source of iron to raise your blood count. But, you know, we always still try to give you the iron tablets. You should also aim to take some of the ferroglobin because you're not just going to raise your iron, but you can raise your energy levels as well with it.
All right, thank you there, Doc. Once again, let's see another question here on the WhatsApp. Hi, if you have a UTI, well, infection, is it possible while using a vaginal wash, it can be irritated?
Yes, it can. So in terms of some of these washes, you really need to, we usually tell persons to stay away from these washes because in terms of the female reproductive system, it is sort of a self-cleaning mechanism. So remember, we have a particular pH that needs to be maintained because we have particular flora or particular bacteria in this area that needs to be maintained in that particular pH. Otherwise, if the pH goes out of balance, you're going to get a lot of different medical conditions coming out of that. So we usually try to tell people to stay away from the washes and the wipes and all of these things that they have for that area. And especially if you have a UTI and you throw off your natural flora, that can irritate the area even more.
Okay, so what are some of the potential complications of untreated, poorly managed PAD?
Right, so if PAD is left untreated, if it is poorly managed, it can lead to a host of serious complications that will significantly impact that person's quality of life. The most immediate and severe complication is what we call critical limb ischemia. And that person is going to experience severe pain even when they're resting, and their wounds on their feet or their ulcers on their feet, they're not going to heal. And then eventually what's going to happen is that the person is going to experience gangrene or necrosis or death of the tissue. And when all of these things occur, that can lead to the person needing a limb amputation, especially if that blood flow cannot be restored to the limb. And of course, if you have a complication like this, it is going to greatly impact your mobility and your independence. And all of these things are also associated with a higher mortality rate. In addition to the limb complications, peripheral arterial disease, like I said before, it will serve as a marker for systemic atherosclerosis, meaning that it can be a sign or a warning sign that if you have atherosclerosis in the leg, then more than likely you have it in other parts of the body. And that is going to put that person at risk for cardiovascular events such as the heart attacks and the strokes. So a lot of studies actually show that individuals with peripheral arterial disease, they have an increased risk of dying from these cardiovascular events compared to people without the PAD. Therefore, you know, it is crucial for us to give you an early diagnosis so that we can have effective management of your peripheral arterial disease. And it's crucial not only for the limb preservation, but also for reducing that cardiovascular risk and improving your overall survival.
All right, we do have some WhatsApp messages coming in. We'll get to them shortly. How is PAD diagnosed, and what tests can someone expect if their doctor suspects they have it?
So often when we're talking about PAD, it's going to be a combination of different things. So first of all, we need to do the clinical evaluation, the history and the examination. What is your risk factors for PAD? And then once we get into the examination of the foot, we may see that you have some unhealed ulcers. We'll check the pulses of the foot to see if there's any pulse in the ankle. We'll look for all the different signs and symptoms that we may see in somebody with peripheral arterial disease. And then after that, there are specific diagnostic tests that the person may go through. And one of the most common and non-invasive tests that we do is the ankle brachial index. And what that does is that it compares the blood pressure measurements at the ankle, and then we do the blood pressure measurements at the arm, and we compare the both. So if you have a lower blood pressure in the leg compared to the arm, that suggests that you have a reduction in your blood flow to the leg, indicating that the person is experiencing peripheral arterial disease. And this simple test, it's very quick, it's painless, and it is highly effective in detecting PAD. And if the ankle brachial index suggests that the person does in fact have peripheral arterial disease, then we go on to other tests such as the imaging test. So a Doppler ultrasound will help us see the blood flow in the arteries. And then we have other imaging tests that are called angiography, where we use dyes and x-rays to provide detailed views of the blocked or the narrowed blood vessels. And in some cases, we may even do an MRA or a CTA, which is basically a CT scan of our artery. So that would be used for more precise imaging. And of course, a thorough examination and evaluation will help us to determine the severity of the PAD and guide you on the best course of your treatment.
All right, let's get some WhatsApp questions. Good day, Basin Doctor, listening from abroad. Great program and information from Freedom 106.5. I have two questions. First question is, can you say what can cause a numbness on the left hand only at night, and when I'm sleeping, I don't have any underlying issues?
Could you repeat the question? I didn't hear some of it.
Yeah, can you say what causes numbness on my left hand only at night when I'm sleeping?
So it can be dependent on the position that you're sleeping in. So if somebody is used to sleeping on their left side, sometimes what tends to happen is that our body weight sort of rests on the arm, and that can cause our weight to be rested on the nerves of the hand, and that can lead to many different symptoms. So you'd feel numbness or tingling or pins and needles in the arm, and people will get it either right or left depending on how you're sleeping. So it's not, I wouldn't say that it's something to be too concerned about, especially because you're only experiencing it at nighttime, and it could possibly just be related to the way that you're sleeping.
Another question here is, protein in your blood results a cause for concern and a bubbles in your urine?
Yes. So if you are seeing bubbles in your urine, sometimes that is indicative of a high protein level. We usually see this in persons who have kidney disease or persons who are diabetic. So really and truly, it is important for you to get a thorough evaluation from your doctor, because yes, they're going to do the urine analysis, but it means that you have a systemic problem going on as well.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. Can you tell me, please, exactly what causes arthritis? Thank you. Do reach home safely. And we just spoke about arthritis last week.
Yes, we did talk about arthritis. Now, remember last week when we were speaking, we were talking and saying that there are several different types of arthritis, but it really is a broad term to refer to inflammation of your joints that will cause the pain and the swelling and the stiffness. But there, because there are several different types, each type is going to have its own cause. So in terms of osteoarthritis, which is the most common type, it is usually wear and tear. And what we mean by when we say wear and tear is that when the cartilage, which is supposed to protect the ends of the bones, when that cushion over the end of the bones wears down over time, it's going to lead to joint damage. That is why as we get older, we are more prone to getting osteoarthritis, because we go along in our years, that cushion or that cartilage is going to start wearing down whether we like it or not. But there are things that you can do to combat the severity of arthritis as you get older. And of course, a lot of those things will involve proper physical activity as well as maintaining a proper weight.
All right, and our final question here, is wearing socks while sleeping at night of any advantage?
In terms of medically, I wouldn't say there's really any particular advantage, but I mean, if you are prone to getting, foot pains because of the cold, or if you are prone to feeling a bit uncomfortable, why not wear it? It is good to help keep your feet warm and keep your feet cushioned.
All right, okay, just 11 minutes away from 1 o'clock. You're listening, of course, folks, to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 and Sky 99.5. 625-2257, and of course our WhatsApp number at 306-1065. So we get back with our topic of discussion for PAD for today. And what lifestyle changes are recommended for individuals diagnosed with PAD?
So lifestyle changes will play a pivotal role in managing your peripheral arterial disease, as well as reducing your symptoms and slowing down the progression of the disease. So I would say the most important thing on my list is quitting smoking. That is actually the single most important step, because smoking exacerbates your arterial damage, and it will accelerate the plaque buildup, and it will greatly increase your risk of having cardiovascular complications in addition to your PAD. And of course, in addition to that, you want to up your physical activity on a daily basis, particularly having supervised exercise programs like walking regimes. All of these things has been shown to improve your walking distance and alleviate the claudication symptoms, as well as enhance your blood circulation. And in terms of your diet, you want to adopt a heart-healthy diet. And this will include consuming a diet that is rich in fruits and vegetables and whole grains and lean proteins and even the healthy fats, while limiting your saturated fats and your trans fats and your cholesterol and sodium. Managing your blood pressure and your blood sugar levels, especially for diabetics, as well as managing your cholesterol levels, all of these are essential in slowing down your disease progression. And if you are obese, weight loss can also greatly improve your symptoms. And of course, in addition to lifestyle changes, some people may require medications to prevent blood clots and to control their cholesterol and lower their blood pressure as well.
All right, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Listening to the program, I'm trying to find out for my feet. Both feet underneath, I'm not feeling well. I'm diabetic. I'm not feeling well about it. How it feels underneath. So it's me when I walk like in ties and things, and I can feel a flowness in it at some point in time. Could you refer me? Can I come and see if you have anybody, if it's you that see about it, and refer it? I listen off air if I can visit and when I can visit.
Okay. So, I mean, usually the persons that we refer our patients to would be vascular surgeons, because they are going to deal with the arterial, the venous systems. So they are the ones that usually ensure that the person gets the Doppler ultrasound. So in terms of if you are not feeling well, in terms of your feet, remember diabetics are prone to what we call diabetic neuropathy, meaning that your nerves are going to suffer because of that increase in your sugar levels in your blood. And on top of that, it is a risk factor for peripheral arterial disease, meaning that there's less blood flow to the feet. So a lot of diabetics are going to experience foot problems. And I would definitely suggest that you go to your local health center and have them refer you to a vascular surgeon. That is where you will get the proper care that you need. They will also perform their preliminary tests and evaluations on you, but more than likely they will refer you to a vascular surgeon if they see the need to do so, because it could possibly just be a diabetic problem and with no PAD involvement.
All right, and another question here. How does a female take care of a UTI without affecting the natural balance, skin infections, or body rash around the genital areas due to the heat and sweat? What can be done to cure these infections?
So if you are diagnosed with a UTI, more than likely you will be given antibiotics to take. Now, in terms of preventing a recurring UTI or preventing recurring infections down there, what you can do is make sure that, of course, you properly wash the area. Sometimes all you need is water. You don't want to make your pH balance go all over the place. So try to stay away from these vaginal washes or the wipes and all of these things. You want to wear loose fitting clothing, as well as your underwear should be more of a cotton material so that it is a breathable material, so that you can sort of alleviate all of the sweating down there. And on top of that, your diet plays a big role in your vaginal flora and fauna. So ensuring that your diet is clean with, you know, the proper fruits and vegetables, and making sure that you cut down or you take out completely the refined sugars and the refined carbohydrates. I think that is one of the points that we most often overlook when it comes to our reproductive health, that the diet does play a big role in that. But if you are going to the gym, yes, you are going to sweat, etc., try to wear more loose-fitting clothing and more cotton-based clothing.
Speaking of the gym, how does exercise help individuals with PAD, and are there specific types of exercises that are more beneficial?
So exercise is one of the cornerstone managements of PAD. So walking programs are often recommended as the most effective type of exercise. Remember, I said one of the symptoms of PAD is claudication, and that is when people can walk for a certain distance and they need to stop because they experience the pain and the numbness and the tingling, all of these things in the leg. So walking regimes actually really help them to walk longer distances. So having that regular structured walking session, it will improve the person's blood circulation to the legs by promoting the development of what we call small collateral blood vessels. So once you start to walk, what tends to happen in the legs is that the legs will give off these little extra blood vessels that will give you more blood circulation that will bypass any sort of blockages in the leg. And that does help to reduce the symptoms of the claudication, improves your walking endurance, and it will enhance your overall physical functions. So, you know, patients will usually feel, or they are usually encouraged to walk until they feel moderate pain, rest, and then resume to gradually build up that tolerance.
All right, maybe our final question here. What are preventative measures can people take to lower their risk of developing PAD or slow its progression?
So if we want to prevent PAD or slow down its progression, we first have to address the modifiable risk factors through lifestyle changes and, of course, having proactive health management. So like I said before, my number one main thing is quitting smoking. That is critical because it will damage your arterial walls and accelerate the atherosclerosis. Maintaining a heart healthy diet, one that is low in the bad fats, in the bad cholesterols, as well as one that is low in salt and added sugar, that will help to reduce your cholesterol and your blood pressure levels while lowering the risk of plaque buildup. And of course, having regular physical activity, even brisk walking, that can improve your circulation, control your weight, and lower your blood pressure. And of course, you want to manage your underlying health conditions as well. The diabetes, the high blood pressure, the high cholesterol, all of these things, managing them is essential for preventing PAD. So making sure that you have your regular checkups, you are adhering to your medications, as well as combining that with the lifestyle modifications, are key components of having an effective risk management. And of course, you want to maintain the healthy weight, manage your stress, reduce the alcohol intake. All of these things will overall positively impact your cardiovascular health and lower the risk of developing PAD.
All right, I do see the lines. Let's see if we can take a question quickly. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I was on diet for 3 weeks. Someone told me take probiotics or yogurt. I don't know, it's just the body system. I don't know. So I took the yogurt, and for that entire night, I was in a lot of abdominal pain. Could you tell me what went on there? A little more faith.
So it could possibly be that the yogurt brand that you had probably didn't have the proper, or it could possibly be that your body still has to adjust to getting the proper probiotics. Remember, you can't just have the yogurt in isolation after having your antibiotics. Antibiotics basically kill the bacteria within your body, and sometimes it can kill the good bacteria as well. So maybe your gut just isn't ready to have the yogurt or the those sort of heavy dairy probiotics. Remember, it's not just the probiotics in the yogurt. There are other components. There's the milk, the dairy, all of those things. So maybe try probiotic tablets instead.
Doctor, well, thank you very much. Right on the wire. It's now 1 p.m. That was another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor, kicking off the week for today, Monday.
Yes. See you tomorrow.
All right. So tomorrow we get another edition of the Lunchtime Doctor. Remember to call us up, WhatsApp us, and keep it locked on to Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1. And do enjoy the rest of your day.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.